Excuse me. Good evening, I'm an alcoholic and my name's Steve. I said it the first 2 weeks and I'll probably say it every week I'm up here. As far as I'm concerned, that's the most important thing. That's the most important thing I'll say from this podium tonight. I have a home group. My home group is the Grape City Group. It meets at 8 o'clock tonight in Northeast. It's an open speaker meeting. I have a sponsor. His name is Andy Daniels. He's a good old-timer with a whole bunch of years sober, and you'll pretty much find him at a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous just about every single day. He's a great example for me. And I have a sobriety date, and that is July 15th of 1989. So this past July, I celebrated 30 years of continuous sobriety. And a couple of things that I wanted to say real quick. First of all, is when I got into doing a little research here, I did a lot of research actually, it made me realize even more that there's no way I could have done 6 and 7 if I wouldn't have done 4 and 5. And like I said last week, I couldn't have done those two if I wouldn't have started with 1, 2, 3. In the very first week, I said, it's pretty amazing if you watch these steps. And I think if I'm not getting anything else out of that, I'm getting anything else out of this, I'm getting that. It just instills in me that much more how important these steps are to take them in the order that they're numbered. It's really important. You know, steps 6 and 7 for me, I have to say, I was a little worried about these two steps because I wasn't real sure that I was going to have a whole lot to say, to be quite honest with you, because these two steps, probably out of all of them for me, kind of seem to be the simplest, and I don't know that maybe I put all that much effort into them. And I also said in the very beginning that I really believe that the only step that we have to take and do 100% without any reservation whatsoever is step number one. And the remainder of the 11 steps, if we give it our best shot at that given time, is the best we can expect out of ourselves. You know, and I started looking at 6 and 7, so I had to start reading some stuff, quite a bit more than I did on the first 5 steps. And I'm pretty amazed at how much literature there really is for these two steps that, like I said, seem to be pretty simple steps, especially step 6 on character defects. There's, and I brought them with me just because, a book called Drop the Rock, and my wife actually had it, and I didn't read the whole thing, but I kind of skimmed through it, and it's pretty amazing, you know, the information that's in there. There's a 12 and 12, and then of course I always like to look at the Hazleton workbooks, but like I said, I had to put a little more of this into it. So it's a little more of this and not so much of this, I think, on these two steps. But that's okay. So since completing step 5, I've seen how my life really works and how it didn't work. You know, looking at these character defects. Honesty over my perception of how things really were, I've concluded that this power greater than myself, whom I choose to call God, is there for my, he's there for my protection, and that I was, I guess I was hiding and turning my back on my God. I never walked away from, I don't think, but I turned my back on the God that I've always believed in during my active alcoholism. And I think, I truly do believe, it was a direct result of these character defects that I really didn't understand that I had. By holding this loving God close to me now, I've admitted to him and to another human being the exact nature of my wrongs or my patterns of behavior. I found that when I'm backed in a corner, I'm full of fear and I'm threatened. And I'm most likely going to do the same things over and over, you know. Like I shared early on, you know, that insidious insanity, you know, thought of doing the same thing again and again and thinking it will be different this time. And, like I said, expecting a different result. And when I share these patterns of behavior with God and another human being, it makes it real. So like I said, in step five, that was what was so important for me, was when it finally came out of my mouth, it made it real. And if I hadn't done four and five, I wouldn't realize the character defects that I needed to work on to understand how I survive, how I get along. Because when I did that, when I share that, it makes it real. And then I honestly can't say that I don't have a problem with a certain situation, or that it's somebody else's fault that something might have happened to me. I have to look at my part in it. So with step six, the most important thing for me to understand is that I'm not able to change by myself on my own free will, on my own doing. I'm not able to do that. I learned that in step six. For whatever reason, I'm unable to change these old ways of thinking or patterns of behavior, so to speak. They're like in my personality. They're ingrained in me. And I've done them for so long, and I've lived that way for so long, that I can't change that on my own. So the reason I believe step six comes before step seven is, before I can ask a higher power to remove these defects of character, I have to completely accept the fact that I can't do it myself. And I got that out of one of the readings, and it really made a lot of sense to me. Before I can ask my God, my higher power, to remove these defects of character, I have to completely accept the fact that I can't do it myself. I can't undo these patterns of behavior by myself on my own. There's a paragraph. There's a paragraph in this one book here, and it's it kind of caught my attention. It's in the Hazleton workbook, and it says, "We might think of ourselves as driving a bumper car at an amusement park. We have a steering wheel, and so we think that we're able to control our path. But in fact, the steering wheel barely helps us. There are so many magnetic fields within and around us that we are destined for collision after collision. So it is with our behaviors. We think that because we have a steering wheel, which is a strong will that enables us to choose our paths in life, we can do away with our defects." And then it says, if we could only drive ourselves hard enough. But in fact, our unconscious motivations, circumstances, and the struggles of others are like those magnetic fields. In other words, life being life, going on around me, insidiously and inevitably pull me back to my old patterns. And ultimately, to top it all off, the car has no brakes. So I simply can't stop. And there's a little more to it than that. But when I read that, that really kind of struck home with me, because, if you picture yourself at Waldemere in the Dodgems, that's really the way I see myself doing it. I'm driving around a circle aimlessly. And life is going on around me, and things are bumping into me and crashing into me, and I think because I have a steering wheel, which is my own self will, that I'm able to change these patterns and correct them. And in fact, I can't. The steering wheel doesn't do me any good. That's what I got out of that. Step six for me is kind of like a look back on steps one and two. Which is total powerlessness leading to total surrender. their powerlessness leading to total surrender. From the realization of hopelessness, hope is born. You know, it's another one of those catch-22 paradoxes. You know, you got to give it away to keep it. You know, and when I realize the hopelessness, I start to get some hope. I finally know and accept that I can't change myself, being myself, what's going on inside. I can change the outside. You know, that's the other thing. I spent a lot of years, a lot of wasted time and energy trying to make everything okay on the outside, you know, out here. Changing other people, places, and things. The way I dressed, the cars I drove, the houses I lived in. So that nobody would know what was going on the inside. And I did not even know, I didn't even know that, you know. But I finally, in step six, I know and I accept that I can't change myself being what's going on the inside. You know, these patterns of behavior, so to speak. So, just as I knew, I admitted and accepted that I was powerless and couldn't stop the insanity of that first drink, it's the same thing, the powerlessness of knowing that I can't change these defects of character. And like I said, and until I do a thorough four step, I don't even know what the hell they are, you know. I become entirely ready to have God remove all the defects of character, because I see how the patterns or the defects fed my alcoholism, fed that all that craziness that was going on, you know. In step six, I started to realize all this. And I finally know that I must change, but most importantly, I know that I can't change by myself. I can't do it myself, but I know that God can. And that's probably one of the most important things. It's finally making that decision. And it's, for me, you know, I remember it was really hard to imagine that all these defects of character are going to be removed. They're going to be gone. You know, I didn't understand that. And the key word for me again is willing. You know, I shared that early on that willing and try are probably two of the most important words for an alcoholic to practice. So for me, the key word once again is to be willing. So so I look at the behaviors from step four and I become willing to have God remove them or control them, something that I'm not able to do myself. It's the ones that it's the ones that I can get away with that are the hardest, for me anyways. Like telling the little white lies or procrastination. Even still today, those are some of the things that I struggle with. And it's because it's easier to get away with that stuff. Becoming entirely ready is another key factor. You know, I used to always just say it was making a decision, which it is. It's becoming willing and making a decision. But becoming entirely ready is a real strong act of faith. You know, that's a real, it's a real leap into faith for me. Because I'm getting ready to ask God to change me, to help me with this stuff. And I don't have any idea what he's going to change or what it's going to be like. You know, it's fear. Again, it's the fear of the unknown. And, after doing step five, after I did steps four and five, I took a little break with my sponsor. But then we immediately went to six and seven. And that's pretty much what I do with any guys that I work with. And I don't know if that's rushing it, but the book even says to do it that way. So like I said, for me to think about this, step six and seven were quite simpler for me than when I started reading into all this stuff and started really thinking about character defects, you know, and what they're all about. And then a way for me A way for me to let go of it was to burn my fourth step. And it even talked about it in one of these other books, that's almost an act, it's almost like a ritual, different things that people do. But for me, that's what my sponsor had me do, was to burn my fourth step. And then, like I said, we immediately went into six and seven. I'm becoming willing to be the person that God wants me to be. The one thing I have to know and recognize is the difference between a character defect and just plain old emotion. And that was something else for me. Because fear and anger are emotions. Jealousy, envy, procrastination, a whole bunch of other ones are defects. And for me, you know, I want to think that I asked God to remove these defects, and then I'm thinking, you know, I remember saying that to my sponsor, that, you know, I'm still getting pissed off and I'm getting angry. And he says, because anger isn't a defect of character, it's an emotion. But what you need to look at is what defect is causing that emotion to, you know, causing the anger. In step seven, the key word is humble. Everything I read, every single thing I read, that was the first thing it said. That step seven is all about humility. And there's a whole lot of different definitions about the word humility. The 12 and 12 calls humility the whole emphasis of step seven. To be humble isn't humiliation, which was another confusing thing, at least for me, in the beginning, you know, trying to figure the difference between humility and humiliation, and they're two totally different things. Humiliation and shame make me feel wrong at the very core. It makes me feel less than or not enough. And I realize that I'm not wrong, I'm not bad, that I'm a sick person trying to get well, that I'm only human. That's one other thing it emphasizes really strong in the one book, is to realize that I'm only human, we all make mistakes. And to remember that God didn't bring me this far by considering me bad or wrong or not worthy. So I'm humble in knowing I make mistakes, but peaceful and secure knowing God's love and care are with me to help me correct it. Step seven is completed with a prayer, and it is on page 76 in the big book. And you don't have to do it exactly like this, but this is the prayer, the step seven prayer, seventh step prayer in the big book. And it reads this, like this: My Creator, I am now willing that you should have all of me, good and bad. I pray that you now remove from me every single defect of character which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. Grant me strength as I go out from here to do your bidding. Amen. And, you know, that prayer is really simple. The one thing I need to remember is in that prayer is that I ask God to remove from me every single defect of character that stands in the way of my usefulness to Him and my fellows. That has a lot of meaning, because it might not be what I want removed, but it's more about what He wants removed or He wants me to work on. Because the prayer says, remove from me every single defect of character, and this is the most important part, that stands in the way of my usefulness to Him and my fellows. So, like I said, I need to remember that, even still today, that, you know, the character defects that I'm working on are, like I said, not necessarily always about what I want, it's more about what God wants for me. So I guess really, like I said, for me, 6 and 7 were pretty simple to do. And it was more about making a decision and saying a prayer. I mean, to keep it that simple. Now, I look at my life today, and are all these character defects gone? Oh, hell no. No, most of them are still with me. I could probably make a list, and I could probably check off a couple, maybe, that are gone. But the important thing is, for me, is to realize and be willing to work on them and ask God for help in removing them. You know, it's almost like the third step when I turn my will over, and then I take it back, and then I turn it over, and I take it back. It's most importantly making the decision and becoming entirely ready, becoming willing to have that. Like I said, there's a lot of character defects that I still have today, and the important thing is they're brought to my attention, and God always has a way of showing me what I need to work on in myself at any given time. So this all said, to sum it up simply, I guess, is steps 6 and 7 are simply making a decision, like step number 3. I become entirely ready to the best of my ability at that very time, and I ask God through a prayer for His help, and I leave the results up to Him. You know, for me, it's that simple. I ask Him to help me with whatever it is that He sees fit that I need help with, and I leave the results up to Him. And my God, anyways, will always find a way to show me what exactly it is that I need to work on, whether it would be procrastination or honesty or, you know, whatever it might be. It's progress, not perfection, and I need to remind myself always that I'm only human, you know. The big book says, and more will be revealed. And my sponsor always tells me that I can and should be revisiting any one of these steps at any given time in my sobriety. If I'm working a good program, I should be revisiting any one of these steps. And I think step 6, I revisit it probably more often than I think. And that's all I got. Thank you.
Does that, you have any questions? Yeah, I knew you would.
Steve Page, alcoholic. I really liked your analogy of the steering wheel on the bumper car. Steering wheel being my self-will, the bumper car, kind of my life, and all the other bumper cars, all the stuff that happens. That really will stick with me, and I appreciate that. And
I also like the fact that you emphasize our need to ask our higher power for help. But when I work on 6 and 7, either with myself or with a sponsee, I also emphasize the need for myself to action, myself to do it. I need to be aware of it, what's happening, and work on making sure it doesn't, you know. So, for instance, one of my many character defects is self-pity. So when I see self-pity wearing it ugly, I will actually stop and say, all right, wallowing in self-pity. You have 30 seconds to feel really sorry for yourself. You've got to get up, call somebody, give somebody some help, do something to get out. Because I can't just sit there and say, God, I need to do it, I need to help myself. So, I assume that you also would be responsible to talk about that as well.
Yeah, are you listening to this, Brad? Yes. I think that's really important, like I said, and I think, at least for me anyways, and I'll get it when I talk to these guys, and they'll get it from me too as well. You know, self-pity's a good one, a big one, but like I said, the examples I was thinking of, I'm big on procrastination, and usually God will see fit a way to show me where I'll get caught up in something, and then I'll be all jammed up because I put off till tomorrow what I damn well should have done today. And it's, it's one of those things where finally I just have to say, you know, get off your butt and do something about it. Definitely can't, you know, it'd be nice to just sit there and just wish everything went down. I agree, it doesn't work that way, no. But I do need to ask God to help me with it because I know I can't do it myself.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
Anyone else? It's working.
You made a comment, and this is one of the issues that I struggle with. Just because you want to do something, you think you need to work on something, isn't what your higher power thinks you need to work on.
Okay.
I have an issue with one of my biggest defects is setting false expectations. Things that I think I need to do, things I think I should do. And I have a real hard time looking past that. How do you get over, how do you finally understand or get to the point where you recognize that this is what I want to do, and it doesn't mean that it's what needs to be done. That's the struggle I have all the time. It's actually physical things, it's emotional, and things don't want to
right.
grow on.
No, and that's usually what it is. It's a lot of it is more mental and emotional. That's a good question. Anybody have an answer? I think, go ahead, Paige.
Sometimes I have to examine my motives.
Yeah. Yeah, like I mean, it's kind of like what I was saying earlier, too. Yeah, there might be something that I'm thinking that I'm concentrating totally on, and it's way off track from what my higher power's got planned for me, so to speak. And usually I'll get hit with something, and it'll show me and get me back on track with what I need to be looking at. And one of the situations, is like I shared last week, is some things going on at work. And I wanted to get into self-pity, and my first thought was, you know, how dare you insult my integrity? And the bottom line was, like steps 4 and 5 tell me, I needed to look at my part in everything that happened. I didn't want to. And, you know, and I had to come to the realization, I took advantage of a few things, and for whatever reason, the changes were made, and I'll be fine, and life goes on. But I think that was more, at that time, you know, like you said, I can sit there and wallow in self-pity, but that's not what God wants me to do. He wants me to realize and move forward with what changes I can make. You know, and it's like almost like the Serenity Prayer. For me, the most important sentence is the last one. It's the wisdom to know the difference. Because I can, you know, God can show me things that I just have no control over and can change, but my perception can turn that around and still tell myself, I can change this if I work on it, and if they'll only do what I want them to do, I can change this, you know, and change is really good when it's my idea, you know. I mean, I love change when it's my idea. And really, I think a lot of it is about that. It's all about me, it's all about changing what's going on in here. And, you know, like the book was telling me, and that's what I got a lot out of it, was for so many years, I lived that way, and that crazy sense of driving the Dodge car, that now how the hell do I get out of the car? You know, how do I stop it? And the way I stop it is just a slow process through asking for help and realizing, oh God, I can't do it by myself. Yes, Brad. To me, there's none. It's the same thing. I mean, unless somebody else sees anything, I see them as the same thing.
Step prayer, take all of the good and bad. I can understand thinking of bad. Why the good?
The way I see that is simply kind of like offering myself up. God, just have me. Take me for what I am. Not only the bad, but the good as well. Or maybe the opposite. Not only the good, but the bad as well. That, I just see that as kind of like offering my whole self. That helps.
It does. We'll see.
Hello, hello. Oh, you son of a gun.
Yeah.
Hello.
Antennas work.
Okay. Well, I guess this is it. It's over with. Tune in next week.
Thank you.
My comment was, you brought the idea of... you brought up the idea of, working on these things and procrastinating. And I think for myself, sometimes the motives are, I want this to do, but maybe that whole thing, the line about...
Right. That might not be what's important.
How do I hold my sponsees to see take themselves out of the picture?
I don't know. I don't know that. I know what you're saying. I understand what you're saying. But I don't know that really taking them. I can't really take myself out of the picture. But I guess try to take my thought out of it, so to speak, and think more with my heart, like you were saying. It's I can focus on things that I'm most concerned with, and it might not be what.
Any other questions?
Well, I actually have an answer to the question we asked earlier, what I was told before, on character defects and shortcomings.
Shortcomings will...
That's good.
...deal with our natural inabilities with some things that we need to overcome. Whether it be maybe physical health issues, things that we have to struggle with because we are of our physical makeup unable to be like everybody else, and so like the norm, so to speak. Maybe you're short, maybe you're not as strong, maybe you're not that. Just because you're not as tall doesn't mean you can't hit as many baskets at a basketball court. You just have to work harder. Where defects is where you is the attitude you take and how you deal with them. Oh, I'm smaller, so I can't do it, so I'm giving up. The shortcoming you can overcome. The character defects is the choice you make to live within that. That's what I was told.
Okay. Did you guys get that?
No.
Uh-oh,
that's an allergy.
Hold it, please.
Trust me, I don't need a microphone.
No, but what we do, we do everything.
The analogy that they gave me one time was, by Mike Weirich, was a character defect was having a bicycle with a flat tire, and a shortcoming was riding the bicycle anyways.
Okay.
Thanks.
That makes sense.
Anyone else? Thanks a lot, Steve.
Thank you.
Thanks for putting up with this.